class. I wish to thank you for your generosity and your wonderful gift that you gave unto me. I, your unworthy teacher, am unworthy of such appreciation that you have shown to me. I thank you with all the feelings that I can muster at this present time toward you. I love you sincerely. I pray for you continually that God would bless the feeble teachings of his precious truth to your immortal souls. And as he has opened your hearts so generously to give unto me, I hope that he may open your hearts likewise to receive the truths that we, in all feebleness, try to teach you. Remember me as your teacher at the throne of grace. The apostles speak unto a church to which he also ministered and said, "Brethren, pray for us." Do pray for me, people. I hope that I have an interest in your prayers. I believe I do. I receive sometimes special opening and liberty in teaching his precious truth, and I believe that your hearts also are open at times to receive it. I hope that God may use the feeble means that he gives us yet in this his precious house, and that you likewise may receive life divine from him as that gift which can never be taken away. Our lesson today is again out of the book of Esther. We have been speaking to you about Esther, that likewise she became queen, and how that Haman, this enemy of the Jews, had received permission from the king and a decree from him to have all the Jewish people destroyed. This man, Haman, he was in his glory now. He aimed at this poor Jew, Mordecai, who sat at the king's gate. This Mordecai refused to bow before him, refused to do him reverence. He followed the dictates of his conscience, and likewise, as a Jew, he was not permitted to do so. And because of this, Haman went into the king and spake to the king about these Jewish people, and he received permission from the king to have all these people destroyed at a certain date. And now when Mordecai heard what Haman had done and the permission that he had received, we find Mordecai clothing himself with sackcloth and ashes and going out into the midst of the city, weeping and wailing and mourning. Some think that he felt that he was the cause of all this because he had not bowed and submitted unto this wicked Haman. But that isn't true. He was faithful and honest to his own conscience in this matter. And now when he began to weep and to wail and to mourn, not only him, but throughout all the provinces over which Ahasuerus was king, the Jews put on sackcloth and ashes, and they also fasted, and they wept, and they mourned. Sackcloth is a cloth made from the coarsest hair of horses and of camels and of goats. Of old, you read that the poor were mostly clothed with this cloth. We find Elijah and likewise John the Baptist clothed with sackcloth. This cloth was used many times to make awnings and tents. And whenever there was a funeral, the people that attended the funeral, they wore this sort of cloth, sackcloth. You often read in scripture of repenting in sackcloth and ashes, a token of mourning, a token of distress, a token of a time of a great calamity. We find Mordecai clothed in this way. And when it was told unto Queen Esther that Mordecai was weeping and wailing and clothed in this cloth, it grieved her exceedingly. And she sent to him a change of raiment. She did not wish him to wear this sort of apparel. She sent him probably a gorgeous clothes of raiment, but he received it not, it says. Or he couldn't receive any gay clothing. He couldn't change his position as being a Jew and having this sentence over his head and also over all the people that were Jews. For this sentence that the king had consented unto was a sentence of death unto all these poor Jewish people. And Mordecai likewise was a Jew, and he would be subject to this decree itself. And now when word was brought back to Esther that Mordecai would not receive the raiment that she had sent him, she again sent one of the chamberlains by the name of Hatach to find out why that he was wearing this clothes and why that he would not receive what she had sent him. And when this chamberlain came to him, he explained to him what Haman had permission to do and how much money he was going to pay into the king's treasuries to have all the Jews slain. And he told this Hatach that he should go into Esther and tell her that she should go into the king and plead with the king for her people. For she had not made known unto the king that she was a Jew. She obeyed Mordecai in this, and therefore Mordecai told her where she was now in that position, so near to the king, she should go in and plead for her people. And now when Esther heard these words, she again sent this chamberlain back to Mordecai. Now the reason for this is that there was communication between these two was that no one was allowed to enter into the court of the king. And therefore, we find Esther sending word back to Mordecai that everyone knew throughout all the provinces Ahasuerus ruled that the king had a law that no one, be it man or woman, was allowed to enter into the court of the king except they had been called. And if they came, then if the king put forth the golden scepter in his hand towards them, then they would be received. Otherwise, it was sure death. And now when word came back to Mordecai that Esther revealed unto him what was in the way of going into the king, he again sent word back to her and said, "Think not, because you're dwelling in the king's palace, and that you're so near to the king, that you will be spared. But if you do not arise and go in unto the king, there will come enlargement from another manner and another way. And you and your family will be destroyed. And all the Jews, they will be delivered from under this sentence." We find in this, my hearers, how strong was the faith of Mordecai, that in the midst of all what was taking place, he believed that if Esther did not go in and plead with the king, then God would surely send enlargement from some other way. So firm was his belief in the God of heaven and earth. And now he said unto her, "Who knows why that thou art in this position as a queen at this present time? Maybe it is just for this purpose." Oh, how wonderful do we see the providence of God over Mordecai, and likewise over Esther. Esther was now queen, and she, in her message, as I forgot to say, had said unto Mordecai, she had not been called into the king for the past 30 days. Esther then, as she was called upon by Mordecai to go in and plead before the king, not only for her people, but also for herself. For Mordecai put it to her that she was a Jew also, that she was also under the sentence of death, and that if she did not go into the king, then she likewise would be destroyed, for the king's decree would go over all the Jews, even if she was even in the palace. And we see in this, my hearers, how that the sentence of death was brought likewise home to the heart of Esther. How many of my hearers know anything about the sentence of death? And this man, Haman, he's a type of the devil. The devil in paradise succeeded to tempt Eve and brought mankind by the sin of Eve into this condition, and that we are all under the sentence of death. By one man's sin, death entered into this world, and death shall soon pass upon each and every one of us. We, every one of us in this place of worship, are doomed. We are under the sentence of death. The devil succeeded in this respect and has succeeded in bringing this upon millions of creatures under the permissive will of God. How many millions of people have not died already, and that in their sins? We are all under the sentence of death in this respect. But have we ever had the sentence of death brought home to us by the Spirit of God? But this is so necessary, my hearers, for we all know that we must die, but it does not move us. It does not trouble us. I am sure not one of you people are doing what the Jews did or what Mordecai did. But they had the sentence of death against them. There was a day coming they would be slain. What did they do? They went into sorrow, into grief, or they went into mourning. Oh, they thought that day will be the end of each and every one of us. You ever think about that day, my hearers? That day's coming for you too. Of course, they knew what day it would be, but you don't know. Maybe tomorrow, maybe tonight. And how are you affected under this sentence? Unconcerned. Be honest about it. Very seldom do you think about it. It don't trouble you any. You're not weeping. You're not mourning. You're not troubled about it. But let God come home and convict you of sin. And let the law come home with its dreadful curses in your soul, ringing into your soul. Cursed is he that keepeth not all things that are written in the book of the law to do them. And all my hearers, when you are brought as a transgressor before the high and lofty one, or when you feel that you are a guilty sinner and that death can overtake you any moment, oh, how will you appear before God? How shall I answer to him for all my sins? Oh, such a sinner is troubled. Oh, such a sinner has the death sentence brought home to him, that he is doomed to die, that he is going to die surely, and that God would be just if God would bring that sentence upon him and send him to that place where he would suffer the consequences of his sin to all eternity. Oh, when persons are brought under conviction of sin, then they have this death sentence at times brought home to them. Then they find themselves like these Jews, weeping wailing, mourning at times, oh, what shall become of my immortal soul? My hearers, this death sentence came home to Esther. Before this, sure, she felt sorry for the people of the Jews, but she would have never went into the king until Mordecai told her that she was a Jew and that she likewise would die. Then it was for her own benefit and also for the benefit of the people that if she went in, then she probably would succeed by this king. And now when Mordecai brought this home to her, and then we find that she sent word back to him. And she said to him, I want you and all the people of the Jews in Shushan to fast and pray for me 3 days. And on the third day, then I will go in unto the king, which is contrary to the law, and if I perish, I perish. We find here Esther then coming to a decision to go in to the king. And if she would perish, she would perish. How many have been brought by the Spirit of God to this place amongst my hearers? Have you ever been brought to your wit's end? Have you ever figured and been brought inwardly to see and to feel that you are nothing but sin, nothing but iniquity, and that by the law of God coming home to you, there was a law that stood opposed to Esther to go in? And this law is against you and me, my hearers. And unless this law is fulfilled by me and you, or by another in our room instead, then we suffer the penalty of sin, and that is death. And oh, when this comes home, my hearers. Oh, I don't know if any of my hearers have ever been there, but I have. I know what I'm speaking about. I've experienced something like this, my hearers. Oh, when God opens up the fountain of the great deep within you, and when you are given to see what a filthy monster of sin you are, that there's no good in you whatsoever, that you can't do anything else but sin, and all you become so lost in your feelings, so ruined and so undone, you can't think that that king would have anything to do with you. Oh, and then the law comes home with its accusations. You transgressed every one of them commandments. You went over the top of your conscience. You didn't listen to God at all inside. You went ahead and did as you pleased. Oh, what a monster of guilt you are in the sight of God. And then to think to go into him. Oh, you don't dare to go into him. You fear if you go into him, well, he's going to spurn you. He won't have anything to do with you. And oh, you come to a decision. How many came to a decision like this and said, well, I'm going to go into him. What comes of it, comes of it. If I perish, well, I'll perish. I'll go into this king. I can't go away from him. I must come to him. I must appear before him someday. Have you ever been there, my hearers? Have you ever made that decision? If I perish, I perish. I will lay at his feet. I will say, Lord, have mercy on me. Oh, what a blessing, my hearers. How few amongst my hearers have been there. All my hearers, we find Esther in the next chapter. Oh, she arrayed herself in royal apparel. And it was the third day. And she went in unto the king, contrary to the law. No one was allowed to enter into the inner court of the king except if the king put forth his golden scepter to that person, be it man or woman. And now she took her life in her hands. You ever do that? You ever risk everything that you had to fall in before this king, come what may? Now, this is what Esther did. She went in unto the king. And she stood in the inner court, and the king sat upon his golden throne. And he saw Esther standing in this court. She must have made a beautiful appearance. It was his wife. He had divorced one wife because she wouldn't come to him. And now when he seen this wife of his standing there, so beautiful, and then his heart and his affections was moved towards her. And he looked upon her, and he looked with a look of favor. She found favor in the sight of the king. And he put forth the golden scepter, and she came forward and touched the top of it. My hearers, does this happen yet today to sinners under the law? Yes. If you will take notice in this what I just spoke to you about, not a word was spoken to Esther. Take notice and give ear. Much can go on in a person's soul. He can be in the favor of this king, the King of Kings, and still not yet have a word from this king. Let me explain myself a little bit. There may be souls here that have been convicted of sin, that have the law thundering in their conscience. They are ruined in themselves. They are undone. Oh, they feel themselves to be lost. Monsters of sin and iniquity. I wonder how many feel themselves like that. And they fear, as I said, that this king wouldn't have anything to do with them. And now what did this king do? He looked at this woman, and she was arrayed in beautiful attire. And she found favor in his sight. And you say in yourself, I ain't arrayed in anything beautiful. All I have is guilt. All I have is sin. All I have is reasons why this king should spare me from his presence. Let me tell you, you don't know this king. You know, when you come in this way, that this king, he's looking at you with eyes of love. His bowels are moved towards you. He will surely have mercy upon you, believe me. If you are in this condition, if you are coming to this king in this way, he has a favor towards you. You can't believe it, maybe. You can't see how he could. But I do. I see in that, that the Spirit of God has been moving you towards him. And God sees in you his own work. He sees those that have been convicted, that feel themselves so guilty, so sinful, and so wretched in his sight. Oh, to think that this king looks on such with an eye of favor. Oh, that his heart is moved towards such to do them good. Oh, my hearers, this king put forth the golden scepter, and so does this King of Kings. Oh, he holds out this golden scepter, whereby I believe he puts forth hope, faith, and love in the heart of such a coming sinner. With that scepter held out in the means of grace, in the word of the gospel, is received by such a sinner. He receives a hope. He receives faith to believe that that king has a favor towards him. He feels his heart warm with affection and love towards this king, the King of Kings. And this king hasn't spoken a word yet to him. Oh, how wonderful it can go with a sinner, my hearers, who is under the inspiration of the Spirit of God and being wrought upon and being given to come and to cast his all before this king. Just as Esther, she was received. He put forth the golden scepter. It was a sign that she would never die. It was a sign that she would live and would not be executed as she deserved to be had he not put forth the golden scepter. And so it is with the soul. All this king puts forth his love, his favor, and his mercy in the heart of such a one, and reveals that such a one will never die, that he has put life in that soul, and that life is his own life. It shall never perish. And now we find that Ahasuerus the king, he spake unto Esther, and he said unto her, "What is thy petition? What is thy request? It shall be given unto thee, even to the half of the kingdom." All this king began to speak. His heart was moved, and he was ready to give, even if it were half of his kingdom, to Esther. My hearers, this King of Kings, should he come to you individually, every one of you, and he should say to you, "What is your petition? What is your request? Have you any petition? Have you any requests for this king?" Ah, there may be some here that would say, "My request would be, pardon my iniquities, for they are many, they are great." Or if I could read some of your hearts as I read my own, it would be, "Lord Jesus, be my king. Oh, save me, Lord. Oh, deliver my soul from going down into the pit. Oh, give me to believe that thou hast a favor towards me, such a guilty sinner." Anybody have any requests like that? This king, he would have given half of his kingdom to this Esther. But this king that I'm talking about, why, he's so liberal, my hearers, more liberal than Ahasuerus was. Why, he gives himself. Could he give any more? Why, if he should give himself unto you, and you should possess him, what more would you need for time and eternity? Or if you have Jesus, you have everything. If he's your king, what have you to fear? Or he is with you day and night. He will never leave you, never forsake you. Oh, this King Ahasuerus, and he was moved towards Esther, and he did good unto her, and so this king in heaven above, he's moved towards his people. A move from all eternity to do them good, and in the fullness of time, he gives them to come to him, and he receives them graciously. He turns them not away. Have you ever experienced it? All the love, the affection that this king has towards his people, I cannot express in words. You must experience something of it in your own hearts. It melts you into contrition at his feet. He is such a wonderful, such a glorious king, so good and so kind. And now, my hearers, this woman Esther, she was given that she could explain to this king what her petition was and what her request was. She did not immediately reveal unto him why she had come into the inner court. And now she says, "My request and my petition is that the king come to the banquet with Haman this day that I have prepared for them." And the king immediately accepted her invitation, and he and Haman went in unto the banquet that Esther had prepared for them. And now when they got to this banquet of wine, and then the king again spake unto Esther and said, "What is thy petition? What is thy request? It shall be granted unto you, even to the half of the kingdom." He doubles this, what he intends, to give unto her. Oh, how good was this king, but how much better is this king in heaven. Again and again he comes unto his dear children and speaks unto them in accents of love. What is your petition? What is your request? And he answers them through the preaching of his word, that they will most surely receive what they petition him for and what they request of him. And as she desired that he again the next day would come to a banquet, he and Haman, and then she would declare unto him what her request and petition was. Notice, if that was you and I, if this king had opened up his heart to us and said, what is your petition, what is your request? I will give it unto you, even to half of the kingdom. Immediately we would have said it. Immediately we would have come out with it. He was ready to give, but Esther did not. Esther now requests them to come the next day to the banquet. Seeing this, the providence of God, how wonderful it was, even over the mind and the thoughts that Esther had. Although Esther knew nothing about it, God knew what was going to take place the next night, and that would be for the furtherance of her petition. And now she requested that they come the next day again to the banquet. The commentary has quite a few reasons why that she spoke this way. In the first place, she wanted to test the king or whether he still had that favor towards her as he had expressed it in words. Likewise, she was very prudent in not being hasty with her petition and her request. For she wanted to make sure that she would receive what she was going to petition him for. And therefore, she tested him to see whether he would come the next day or not. And if he didn't want to come the next day, then she figured probably, well, there's no use of me petitioning him and requesting him for this, for he will not come to the banquet, so surely she wouldn't make much progress with it. But it was the remarkable providence of God over this king and over her. And he consented readily to come the next day again, and Haman was invited likewise. And we find that Haman, he went out of the presence of this banquet with a joyful heart, filled with gladness. This man Haman, the type of Satan, he was filled with joy and gladness. And he came to the gate of the king. There sat this Jew, Mordecai. And when he went near him, Mordecai was in his way. And Mordecai didn't get up, even out of respect to him, and move out of his way so he could get by. Mordecai did him no reverence whatsoever. And when he seen this Jew sitting that way and he wouldn't bow before him, he was filled with indignation against Mordecai. He was changed in a few minutes from the gladness and the joy that he had in his heart. He was filled with anger. He was fretting and fuming. And inwardly, if you could have read that man's heart, if he had a dagger in his hand, he would have jabbed it right into Mordecai. He would have killed him on the spot if he could. That's the way he felt about Mordecai. But he refrained himself. He considered that there's a day coming when all the Jews would be slain, and then he would fall too. And now he goes home, and when he comes home to his wife, he begins to explain to his wife what had taken place with him. He's filled with himself, filled with pride. Oh, there isn't anyone better in the world than Haman. He tells him how rich he was, how many children he had, and how this king had honored him and lifted him up above all the princes in his kingdom, and that he had been to a banquet of wine, and that the next day he was invited again. There was nobody else invited but him. And surely the king liked him, the king favored him, and now even the queen, she invited him to this banquet, and she surely meant to honor him also. But he says, this Judas sits at the gate of this place, him, he says, I hate him, I detest him. And now his friends and his wife, and they spake unto him and said unto him, why don't you have a gallows made? And then go into the king and ask that you could hang Mordecai on these gallows. And this man, Haman, he considered this and he thought it was a very good idea. So he had a gallows made right in the front of his house, 50 cubits high. A cubit is 22 inches. So it was almost about 90 feet high, these gallows that he had made. And now he went to sleep that night with that on his mind, that the next morning he would get up early and he would go in and make request unto the king to have Mordecai hanged on the gallows. This is what this man wanted to have done to this creature who would not bow before him, who would not reverence him. My hearers, this man is a type of the devil, Haman. He is after each and every true Israelite that will not bow before him, that will not serve him. Everyone that has been delivered from his power and has been given to seek Jesus Christ as their Savior, this Satan, he harasses them. Oh, if he could, he would devour them. Oh, he compasseth their path. Oh, if he only could destroy them. That is the aim of Satan. Just like Haman, he desired the life of this Mordecai, so does Satan to desire the life of each and every one whom God loves, whom God has been given to be born again. And now the next morning, why we find that Haman, he's going to go into the king and he's going to plead with the king so that he could hang this man. But now this king, he went to bed that night and he couldn't sleep. Sleep departed from him. Not because he had made a decree to slay all the Jews. It would have been a good thing had he been troubled about that, but he wasn't. He doesn't know himself why he couldn't sleep. Any of my hearers ever troubled with that? You go to bed, you go to sleep, but you can't sleep. Something's on your mind. The mind is so busy sometimes that it won't leave the body rest. You know, a good night's sleep is of the Lord. You pray before you go to bed, Lord, give me a good night's sleep. That's necessary, my hearers, that your body be strengthened and refreshed, and that you will be capable of performing the labors of the next day. But this king, sleep departed from him. He was troubled. And while he was troubled in this way, he asked that the book of the Chronicles be brought to him. Not that someone would read that and read him to sleep. That wasn't the purpose of it. And surely by bringing this book of the Chronicles, why, it would bring his mind more into unrest. For then he would hear of all the things that would taken place and have taken place in his kingdom. But it was God that put it into his mind to have the book of the Chronicles brought before him. And now they began to read out of this book to the king. Came forth in this book what Mordecai had done, how that two men had sought the life of the king, and how that Mordecai had made it known unto Esther, and how that these two men had been examined and it had been found out that it was true and that they had been hanged on the gallows. And this king, he says, What's been done to Mordecai for this? Has he been rewarded for what he did? No, they said. Nothing has been done to Mordecai for this. And now this king, he wanted to reward this man, Mordecai, but he didn't know how, in which way. And just then, we find Haman coming into the court of the king. And he asked the king, who was in the court? And they said, Haman. Send him in, he says. So Haman, he came in unto the king. And now the king begins to talk to Haman about how he should reward a certain man and what he should do to reward this man. This king, he desired then to repay Mordecai for the favor that he had shown unto him. Now what happened after this king had made known unto Haman what he wanted to do, we hope to talk about next week, the Lord willing. Our time is gone. That's all for today.